Okay, so I'm a family physician. I work for the LA County Department of Public Health. I oversee clinical preventive services, but this study was done in our tuberculosis division. My collaborators are here listed on the slide, and Ricardo Basurto Davila is our health economist. He is the best contact for this, and his contact information is what you'll find at the end of the presentation if you have specific questions. You're embarking on similar endeavors, et cetera. The other folks that are on here, UNUE is the epidemiologist in tuberculosis. Pamina Bachi is a policy analyst, and Dr. Alvarez is the director of tuberculosis. What we looked at was changing our screening policy for K-12 students coming into our county. I have no relationships to disclose. So in terms of why did we do this study? First of all, our TB screening policy was not in line with national guidelines. So we didn't, what we were doing, which was screening all new children that were coming into LA County Public Schools, that included kindergartners or first-time entrants into the state, either from another state or from another country, simply was not in line with what the American Academy of Pediatrics, the CDC, Infectious Disease Society were all recommending. So we just didn't like to be practicing non-evidence-based public health. Second, it was a very costly screening program. This was screening essentially 100 to 200,000 children a year, planting a PPD, or a tuberculin skin test. And we were essentially only identifying through this program one active case of TB per year. So an incredibly costly program to be running for very little reward in terms of what we were actually hoping to achieve, at least in today's world. When this program, in fact, was instituted, it was instituted for other reasons and was really a surveillance program. Today, we probably wouldn't institute a surveillance program that involved placing a skin test on a child. But at the time this program was instituted, that was really what the purpose was. So at any rate, we were doing all this screening, identifying only one active case of TB. And then in the process, we were also giving our Department of Public Health TB clinics a lot of latent TB to manage. Because, of course, once that patient came in, had a positive skin test, which lots of our kids did, 40 to 60% of them that were being screened and walked through our Department of Public Health doors, in fact, did have latent TB. And then all of a sudden, our public health nurses and our TB physicians were in charge of managing the latent TB treatment for all of those children. Which is, you know, perhaps not appropriate. Number one, we're not primary care clinics, we're tuberculosis clinics. Latent TB is certainly something that can be managed and treated in regular primary care clinics. I certainly did that all the time in my practice in family medicine. And then perhaps in line with the discussions around health reform, were we really doing the right thing by these children? Because this is not, we were seeing them outside of medical homes, and we really want kids to be seen as a part of medical homes. Or being seen in proper full-service medical homes. And of course, kids essentially all in the state of California do have access to health insurance programs. So that was another motivation. So here's the list of the TB guidelines that recommended targeted skin testing versus the universal skin testing that we were doing. The policy, I think as I previously stated, had been in place a number of years. The first time that it went into place was 1985-86 school year. Again, it did cover all children entering kindergarten and then all children entering from other states or countries, anywhere through K-12. It was approximately 110,000 to 175,000 children a year. The actual population of children that qualified is, of course, larger. Those are the numbers of children that we actually got results on. So, of course, there may have been many more children that were actually tested, but we never got the results. And then there were probably lots of children that were not in compliance with this policy, and so then were never tested. In fact, we know that our public schools had about a 90% compliance rate. Catholic schools, which is not on here, also had a very high compliance rate, approaching 90%. Private schools in general, separate from Catholic schools, were only about 50% compliance rate. It was a paper-based reporting system until 2005, so for every single child that was tested, there was a sheet of paper that came to the Department of Health. That was changed after 2005 to a web-based reporting system. So in terms of looking at those TB skin results, just 2005 to 2009 data, We had 1.6% positivity rate, so one out of every 63 children that was tested came back with a positive skin test. If you stratify that U.S. versus foreign-born, you can see that the foreign-born had almost a 20% positivity rate, and the U.S.-born was less than 1%. So essentially, if you're a U.S.-born child, regardless of where your parents were born or regardless of your race, ethnicity, we were having to test 125 children to get one positive skin test. Again, not a very effective or promising screening program. So when we looked at, could we target this TB skin testing, you can imagine there were some concerns. If you target a test, any test, to a foreign-born population, schools were nervous with this racial profiling. There were lots of concerns as to how that would be practically implemented without some of the some negativity around things that public health didn't really want to be associated with. But nevertheless, we needed to target our skin testing program. We knew that another reason to do this was to prevent unnecessary treatment and testing. So even with a test like the TB skin testing with a specificity that we thought it had in our county of 99%, for every 100 children we tested, we were still going to have one false positive. That's putting one child on 6 to 12 months of INH, and then all the associated testing, chest x-rays, follow-up visits that was going to be required, lab testing for liver enzymes, et cetera. So in a county as large as ours, that was going to be several hundred children probably, at least 100, a minimum of 100 children. If not several hundred, we're going to be those in that false positive category. So that was really the angle that we took in terms of selling this to our stakeholders, including the school district, was we want to redesign this policy so that we prevent that unnecessary treatment and testing of those children. We also tried to sell it, although this was not as popular of an argument, on saving the families of those children time and resources, the opportunity costs from them missing work and things like that. And then for our own internal discussion, not so much with our stakeholders, we talked about the DPH-TB clinics in terms of how best do we use our own TB physicians and nurses in terms of the staff and resources, the opportunity costs. If they're spending time treating latent TB, they're not doing contact investigations on active cases. But for our cost analysis, all of these things went into our cost analysis, right? We had to put a number on what each of these things meant. What, you know, that time that the children spent in clinic or the family spent in clinic, you had to put a number on that, right, in order to put it in your cost effectiveness analysis. And same with, for instance, TB staff time. I don't know that I'll go into a lot of detail on this, but I wanted to touch on one thing in particular, because every number, as you go through a cost effectiveness analysis and you do a lit review for every single number that you plug into your analysis, it's very time intensive and certain things become very tricky. So the specificity of this test was one of those things. And there, in the literature review, there were many specificities that were published, certainly in different populations. Both the sensitivity and the specificity can change. If it's a foreign-born population, if it's a U.S.-born, there are papers out there. And I'm happy to share the literature review that we did with this with anyone that's interested. But in terms of, you know, our first world countries versus developing countries, so many numbers are out there. In the end, for specificity, we actually did confirm with using our local prevalence. So we took the number of active TB cases, we worked through the formula going backwards to in fact say what our specificity was for this test in our own local county. If in fact the test had had a lower specificity, the prevalence would have been negative, is essentially how the equation worked out. So we knew, again, based on the number of active TB cases that we had in this pediatric population, that our specificity had to be about 99%. Additionally, if we'd had a lower specificity, that would have meant more false positives and more money saved from not testing. So in terms of how we frame the results of a cost-effectiveness analysis, this gives us a rather conservative estimate of our results. Another thing that was a big point of contention in our analysis was whether or not our foreign-born population was BCG vaccinated, because of course that also changes the results of it, or could potentially change the results of a TB skin test. We spent quite a lot of time with the BCG Atlas that's published online. I'm sorry, it's been a number of months now, but I think it's McGill University in Canada that hosts that BCG Atlas. that talks about the country-specific vaccination patterns and penetration or coverage of BCG vaccination. In the end, we decided, based on where the bulk of our children were coming from in LA County, that we were essentially an un-BCG vaccinated population. This just gives you an idea of some of the literature review that was done, again, on each data point that goes into your cost-effectiveness analysis, and then those become model assumptions. So you can see sensitivities on here, TST specificity, both for BCG and non-BCG foreign-born children, in addition to latent TB prevalence in U.S.-born versus foreign-born children. We also, on the cost side of it, these were some model assumptions. Almost all of these came from the CMS schedule of reimbursement of services, and then for the cost, and then our TB protocols for LA County Department of Public Health. So the assumption overall is that any child that enters our system that is diagnosed with latent TB or active TB will in fact be given a course of diagnosis and treatment that is in line with our own protocols. That may or may not be true, but that's an assumption of the model. So just to compare where we were with our policy and where we wanted to go, the current policy had no paper screening to identify a high-risk child. All children went straight to TB skin testing. It was done primarily upon entering kindergarten. We did have, of course, children that are coming in all grades, K through 12, but the bulk of them, over 100,000, were in the kindergarten, entering kindergarten. And it's essentially universal that they're going to have a follow-up visit, so there's going to be additional office time that's needed separate from the placing of that PPD test or that skin test. The new policy was aimed at doing a paper-based screening for all students. Only those children that were identified to be high risk would then move on to TB skin testing. We moved it to entering at the doing this screening and testing at the first grade level because we were already doing a physical, a CHDP, Child Health Disability Prevention Program physical that was required of school entry at first grade. So we combined it with an existing health exam. And so essentially there were no additional office visits. This was something that was built into an existing screening program that we liked better because it also put these children with a medical provider, a medical home, right? These are, a school physical cannot be done in a Department of Public Health clinic in Los Angeles County. So in order for these children to be getting that school physical, which of course includes like a heart exam, a lung exam, it's a full physical, it must, anemia, other blood work, et cetera, it must be done at a, proper primary care facility. In terms of what did that screening test look like to identify high-risk kids for TB, this is taken directly out of AAP publications. If any of these were a yes, the child is considered high-risk and they get a skin test. So a parent or child born outside the U.S., travel to a high-incidence country for greater than a week, contact with a person with active TB, and then contact with a person with latent TB or positive skin test. So in terms of the objectives of what this particular analysis sought to achieve, we wanted to look at estimating the health and economic consequences of changing our policy, again, for students entering kindergarten to grades 1 through 12. We wanted to go from universal skin testing to targeted testing, to a universal paper screen followed by targeted skin testing, only for those children that are elevated TB. And then the perspectives that we were going to take were both healthcare and society. We really, anytime you embark upon an economic analysis, I feel like you spend a lot of time on this perspective question because this answers what your model's going to look like and what are, what you want your answers to look like on the other end. And we could have looked at this just from the Department of Public Health perspective, right? We could have done an analysis that said, if we change this, how does this change our bottom line in the Department of Public Health? And that would have, answered the concerns of our health officer. It may have answered the concerns of our board of supervisor. But it certainly wasn't going to answer any of the concerns for our stakeholders, which were the school district and the nurses, parents, et cetera. So, you have to kind of think about who's making the decision, who's the audience that you have to answer to, and then design your economic analysis from that perspective. In terms of our data sources, obviously we had the literature review, which is the third bullet point down. We had our TB control program data, so the school reporting data in addition to our TB registry. We used census data. We use those testing and treatment protocols that are specific to our county public health department in terms of treatment, the CMS schedule of reimbursement, and we did have occasional moments where we had to rely on expert opinion. We try to stay away from that, but it does come up. We elected to essentially ignore children after kindergarten in our model. So we just took the bulk of the children that we were screening. We just looked at kindergartners. Those are the cohort that we entered into our model, so 110,000 kindergartners. Part of that was just simplicity, trying to, you know, simplify the model. The other thing was to really, we felt like that was the bulk of the screening program, that was the bulk of where our money was going. And so that was fair just to look at this particular cohort. We also knew that in terms of where our active TB cases are in LA County, pediatric cases, there are many more in the high school level than there are in younger children. And we knew that there might be a second policy decision that was made as to, like, were you going to have to screen those high school kids in a different way, or those middle school and high school kids. So we left that alone, and we said, you know what, we're just going to tackle the kindergartners. We know this is a screening program we don't need to be doing. So let's make our cost analysis just look at this cohort. So we followed them for 12 years into the model, essentially until they graduated high school. They transitioned over time between four health states, non-infected, latent TB or PPD positive, active TB, and then death. The limitation in terms of our model, I know limitations usually come at the end of a presentation, but I'm going to say this is a major limitation. We did not include any transmission here. Part of that is because, again, it would have made it very complex in our model to have included transmission. But also, pediatric cases are not highly infectious. If you look at our registry data, it's a rare child that actually even has a 1-plus or 2-plus sputum, much less a 3-plus. You just don't have a highly infectious active TB population. So even if there was an active TB case in our model, which there was, in the real world, you may never see any transmission from that child. So that was an assumption that we made. It is a limitation, but we thought it was a fair assumption to make for our model. Just to give you an idea of what the Markov model looks like in the branches, I know this is not probably the easiest to see, but the TB screening policy coming in is the first line, and then it spreads out to either targeted testing or universal testing. In the targeted testing, you go to high risk or low risk, and then every branch has the four disease states. So, and this is where you fill in the numbers, and then in the end, the software does beautiful things with your numbers that we don't have to do, thankfully. I think I'll skip over these for time, but the red, of course, these false positives, this was one of the main things we were trying to get rid of by targeting our skin testing. We're trying to get rid of false positives. This was the main selling point, again, for our stakeholder audience to whom we were presenting these results, was to get rid of these false positives. And then I think I've already kind of touched on these, but the cost savings that would come into play. So decreased unnecessary testing and treatment, decreased use of adult time, parent time essentially that's spent in taking these kids to monthly latent TB visits, treatment visits. But of course the health risk is, are you going to increase your number of active TB cases? In terms of costs, just to outline, you know, healthcare system side costs versus household, have screening and testing costs. They have latent, they have active. What differs is obviously the households don't experience any costs that are involved in contact investigation. That's a cost that solely lies with the Department of Health. And then death is also something that the cost lies with households, not with the Department of Health. And this is the money slide. So in terms of the results, you can see that with the universal testing, the overall cost to society for our screening program was $7.4 million a year. I'm looking at that red band. The bulk of the cost, actually it's about half and half, but healthcare system was $4 million of that, and cost to households was $3.4 million. If we go to targeted testing, we drop the number to $4.7 million per year. With households being the ones that really largely benefit, their cost to household drops to $1.6 million. The healthcare system still spends $3.1 million. And therefore, the difference is $2.7 million overall is money saved. Again, the bulk of that is to households, $1.8 million, and about $1 million to the healthcare system. In terms of looking at, you know, what would happen with the number of active TB cases, so that risk on the other side of it, the model predicts that we have 9.5 cases of active TB per year. If we go to targeted testing, we miss one. We're missing 1.5 on average. So now we have 10.9 cases of active TB. And there are essentially no deaths. I know that those numbers don't really make sense down at the bottom, but essentially nobody in our country, if no pediatric, there are no pediatric TB deaths. So essentially that number is that we just don't really have to worry about deaths, thankfully. And then if you calculate it out, you take that 1.4 cases of active TB that we had prevented and we do the numbers to make it one, essentially we are spending about $2 million a year to prevent one case of active TB. And I think anyone that's familiar with looking at money and how money is spent in the United States will say that's way too much. We would never spend $2 million a year or shouldn't spend $2 million a year on anything, especially this is not even a death. Remember, this is an active TB case, but this is not a death. So anyway, I think we were able to prove quite successfully that this was a screening program we didn't need to have and was not an effective use of our public health resources. This is a slide that actually the health economists would do a much better job with anyway. So again, if you're in the stages of doing your own cost-effectiveness analyses, I encourage you to contact Ricardo, and he can do a great job. But this essentially says, you know, for any of those assumptions we made, costs or whatever in the model, you have a range, right? You might be off. You know, the TB skin test may not be $10, it might be $50. And so kind of how robust are your conclusions based on the assumptions you made? Just of note, because TB sensitivity was one of the ones that we spent so long on, that's the one down at the bottom. TB sensitivity can range from 71% to 82%, and in fact, it has very little impact on the cost effectiveness or the cost outcomes of our study. So this is a very good model in terms of at the end looking back and saying, what is it that really affects the cost in your model? In the end, none of these affected, you know, changed our cost outcome. You know, the lowest it would be 900,000 instead of 2 million, and then all the way up to 3 million. So even at 900,000, this is not a cost-effective screening program. So let me just put up here Ricardo's information in case you want to write it down. Ricardo Basurto de Vila, again, is our health economist for the LA County. Very friendly guy, CDC trained to do these economic analyses, and very friendly guy. We'd be happy to answer questions. Thank you.